Yogami. Okay, and welcome back everyone to a new episode of Yogami, a podcast about yoga and stuff originating in South Florida. And we're back now after a kind of brief hiatus, brief summertime hiatus, a mini hiatus.
Very mini.
A hiatus. And we are here. We're excited once again to have a friend of the podcast joining us. We're here with Lourdes Sanchez, a.k.a.
Lulu. Lulu.
And Lourdes has been certified most recently at the 500 level in yoga therapy. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we had her on board today because she's also been working with veterans for some time. And that is the theme of today's episode, yoga and veterans. And we're excited about this episode because, well, the needs of veterans are so prominent in today's society in the United States in particular, because we're basically on a permanent war basis.
Yeah.
And really, we have been since like the second half of the 20th century. So mm-hmm. There's always a war going on somewhere or other. And there's all sorts of people, because of the way we've organized our society, who go experience incredibly mentally disturbing, mm-hmm. psychically and spiritually disturbing things, and then they come back to society, mm-hmm. and they need to make sense of that.
But they stay in that stress level.
Yeah.
They stay in a fight or flight,
yes.
state at all,
yeah.
times.
Right.
And even in addressing it as a yoga perspective, you have to make sure that you don't use like drumming or anything that might remind them,
huh.
of that.
So there's all sorts of special considerations.
Oh, completely. We take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the word Shavasana is to all of us who have practiced yoga is corpse pose.
Mm-hmm.
We can't say corpse pose in when you're dealing with vets or even first responders. We work with that population, and they are always closing their eyes. Stuff that you say, close your eyes and bring yourself to center, or come inside. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that,
yeah.
because sometimes coming inside means bringing them back to the stress.
So major challenges in just having an ordinary class.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah,
you have to really prepare with the person that I'm working with. It's in the Hollywood area. And we have a lot. We have like 20 to 30 vets that come to her class. And they see her class as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very important. We are protected by the unit. Lori Nadel is the teacher that teaches vets. She says, we're part of the unit. If anything happens to any of us, we are in that unit, therefore protected by them.
That's so interesting. Let me give, I'd like to come back to that theme. Let me give listeners a sense of the scale that we're talking about, because I think one of the pertinent things about this topic is, of course, that I think it has broad application. That is, that there's a lot more veterans than people think. But also there are ways that we can relate this this topic to, like, more broadly than just actual veterans. Before I do that, though, I need to introduce my co-host.
Definitely.
The lovely Anna Margaret.
Hello, I'm right here, as
Welcome
always.
Back.
Nice to see you again.
This is the fifth episode
of
Yogami. We're kind of on a roll.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. And it's actually very successful. So if anyone's listening out there and want to hear our older shows, we are available through iTunes. And there is a Yogami website. If you just type in Yogami into any browser, the website for the podcast, which is housed on Podomatic, will come up, and you can get all our old episodes through there also. And if you like what you're hearing, just leave a comment, and we'd really appreciate that. So I was looking up statistics, and I was really surprised at the kinds of things I was finding. So this is just like through a brief search to get a sense of the scale of how many veterans are out there. I found one site that's that claims that as of September 2014, and we're just a couple of days out from where the president announced like he's going to increase the levels of forces in Afghanistan. This site reported that there are about 2.7 million American veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
Wow.
You know, so these are huge numbers of people compared to 2.6 million Vietnam veterans who fought in Vietnam. And this leaves aside all the other veterans and all the other kind of, you know, minor skirmishes that people get involved in. And then, according to the RAND Corporation that has studied things like this for decades, they claim that at least 20% of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans have PTSD and or depression. 19%, and I've actually come across higher statistics, 19% of veterans may have some form of traumatic brain injury. And oftentimes all of these things are working together. So some kind of traumatic brain injury with PTSD, with depression. And then, of course, then compounding that is attempts at self-treatment or very narrow forms of intervention, like through drugs, you know, prescribed or otherwise. So a lot of veterans are caught up in like the opiate crisis that the country's going through right now. You know, I think there's a great need to understand the relationship or how yoga might serve as a, I'm not sure even how to phrase it. More than just a tool, right?
It's a lifesaver,
yeah.
I would think, for a lot of people. Because there was actually a TED Talk about warriors coming back. And what happened is, you know, they've been away. They've been in this unit that you're talking about. They've been in this community. And then they come back and they're kind of by themselves. Like everybody's dispersed.
Yes.
Someone or people have died or they're injured and they can't even see each other. So they feel really lost, you know. So I think just like for all of us, like yoga is a place of refuge,
yes.
Right? For veterans, I would think that that would even be more in need because they're also now when, what I want to ask you, when you practice or when you teach, is it on an individual level or is it group?
This is a group that we get together for, but I have also taught one-on-one. When veterans come back with injuries, so you have to make sure you know what each person has. PTSD is not only for veterans. There's other people that come in with a lot of traumatic experiences. There, that you have to address. With every individual, we have to ask one-on-one, that we do one-on-one before we put them in groups. Also, I have had people that I've worked with heart failure due to injuries. Other people have balance problems because bombs have exploded close by to them. And the shock on their ears just gives them. So everything has to be addressed. And that is one-on-one. And usually the people that teach warrior yoga, as we call it, there's more than four people sometimes assisting in the class because you have to deal with a lot of stuff at the same time.
I really like this use of the term warrior because I think that's very much connected to how it is that yoga can be helpful to people with these kinds of backgrounds and experiences, because I think many people aren't familiar with the close relationship that there is historically between yoga and warriors, warrior ascetics, giving warriors a path to self-mastery and control. And I think part of the issues that veterans are facing, it seems to me, are related to other are issues related to issues that people more broadly in our society face. You know, that it's a kind of crisis of meaning, you know, trying to make sense of your life. So, like, I'm really interested in workplaces, and I think a lot for a lot of people, in their workplaces, they're facing similar issues. I mean, there's not like bombs going off. I don't mean to exaggerate that. But I'm saying that, you know, people get up and they go to work, and at the end of the week they get a paycheck, but there is such a disconnect because of the way our society is organized between what a person does day in and day out and being able to derive personal meaning and gratification from that, that I think there is a similar sort of searching that goes on in people more generally, apart from veterans.
From veterans, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I see, especially when you're working with people with PTSD, mm-hmm. that they don't have to be veterans.
Yeah.
And right. they come to the veterans class mm-hmm. because they identify with the teaching method.
Huh.
There's a lot of people with stress disorder that cannot close their eyes for relaxation. Oh. And as a yoga teacher, for me, it was very interesting that I am trying to center them or bring them to a calm level,
yeah.
doing a type of restorative mm-hmm. Yoga for veterans, and they won't close their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
No one in the room closed their eyes because
wow.
they are in that
yeah.
state.
A permanent
and
alertness.
Yeah, they are in always alert.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an idea of like how you help them then to focus or to relax with eyes open?
Well, I usually start by just gentle movement mm-hmm. and breath. Another thing that you have to work with is the breath. You can't give them certain pranayama because you can't excite them. On the contrary, you have to keep it all yeah. low because they come in excited already. Mm-hmm. So you want to...
So no breath of fire?
No.
No
Kapalabhati.
Okay.
No, nothing like that. You do, same breath, counting breath.
Mm-hmm.
If it's comfortable, at all times you ask. Because people with heart disease and people with mm-hmm. Certain injuries can't hold their breath. No breath retention.
Right.
If you want to take them, twists can be a little bit challenging and the breath slows down because mm-hmm. the fact that you're twisting. And things like that is how we calm them down. We bring them to the here and now. Balancing poses are our main focus, even in warrior pose, which you have to keep your balance.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that is balancing,
mm-hmm.
they are able to get themselves here and now and not think of past,
yeah.
present,
wow.
or anything like that. And that's how we keep
it. Do you use an unusual number of balancing poses in a class like this? More than you would in a regular class?
More than in a class, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
Lulu, can you give us a sense of how you first, in terms of your training, because I think some people who might listen to the show who are interested in actually doing work like this, how did you first become interested in working with veterans per se?
I have always had great admiration for those who protect us. After I finished my 200 hour, I wanted to get more involved with helping not only veterans, but I like also working with the Parkinson population.
Uh-huh.
So I started seeing the benefits that they derive from each class. You would see their difference, the way they calm down.
Yeah.
It's funny, as Anna Margaret teaches in class, that she should take a before and after picture of faces when we're going through
mm-hmm.
Either a class or a restorative practice. And it's the same thing. You see it. And you see the unity in them. And I felt that they are protecting us. The yeah. least we can do is help them
yeah.
in their hour of need. So it was really easy for me to get involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Lori was a teacher who was in the warrior program. It was at Nova University that started the study.
Wow.
And that's how I got in, and I started working with them.
So at NOVA, they have a program that continual. Was that a particular study, or is
that
it
was a study?
Okay.
That was done. But then we continued teaching in Memorial in Hollywood, in Memorial Hospital for Vets. And now we're teaching in the community center in Hollywood. It's free classes. We don't charge for our classes for vets or first responders or families. We get them all in there.
And is the training for working with veterans, is it is there a component that's specifically designed for that? Is, you know what I'm saying?
It's yes, like Connected Warriors was the program that was meant for them, for the warriors who are coming back with PTSD, with anxiety disorders, with stuff like that. But we took it a step further. In the fact that we don't only work with that population, but we also work with people who have injuries. Mm-hmm. We try to do an equal program that they can all get involved in.
So there's an overlap there with what would typically be called like yoga therapy, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Good. Let me ask you, what's the average age of your students?
50 plus.
50 plus.
Yeah.
And is it mostly men?
Yes. Their wives come in. We have three or four of the wives that come in and are very much involved in the yoga program because they like it.
So they practice with their husbands?
With their husbands.
Oh, how lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And if just out of curiosity, the ethnicity, is it mixed? Is it
mixed, completely.
It's mixed, wonderful.
Yeah.
And that reflects the nature of the armed forces now, huh?
And what is funny to me is that they have a camaraderie that goes beyond, for example, there are warriors that were born in Mexico. There are warriors that were born all over the world and have served in the United States Armed Forces. So it's really cool to see that they all have this bond.
Yeah.
And I think that we should learn from that because they have no issues of color or
so there's no borders between them.
Nothing.
It's just one.
They're one. Yeah. They're a unit.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who there is in the unit.
You know this language about the unit. It makes me want to read something. I was doing research for the show, and there's this great book. I've talked to Anna Margaret about it, called The Great Transformation by Karen Armstrong. And she writes on religion and history of religion and so forth. And this book, The Great Transformation, she goes back to early historical times, and she's really exploring the way the great religions, the Hebrew religion, the Zoroastrianism, Confucianism as a world philosophy, the philosophies around the Ganges that produced yoga, all of these religions, the way they were answers that tried to transform human beings' inner lives. Right. And so there's this great quote, because so much of what we're talking about reflects or relates to it. And so she's talking about the rise of Jainism. And she says, Mahavira, the great hero, was thus offering an alternative ethos to the warrior class. So she's talking about the traditional warrior class in society. She says, the new heroism utterly rejected fighting, but required courage of its own. Later, the Jain order would be sponsored by kings and warriors who were not able to abandon their military duties, but who hoped to do so in a future life. So they're talking about this even, you know, lengthy historical connection between a warrior caste and people who engage in warfare and yoga. And she goes on, so despite its dedication to nonviolence, the Dharma frequently used martial imagery. The Jain ascetic was a warrior who was battling his own belligerent instincts and warding off the bad effect of the aggression that characterized all unenlightened people. The ascetic would win as much glory for himself, his family, and his order by his life of ahimsa as a soldier on the battlefield. The Jain community was called a gana, a troop. To become a jina required the valor, determination, and ruthlessness toward oneself that was the mark of a true hero.
Oh, that's lovely.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I just love it. And it's, you know, I think it gets to, I think at the most developed level, some of what you're describing, you know, the way they think of themselves as a unit, the practicing as a unit, that all of that, you know, and also the depth transformation that yoga really is capable of bringing about.
And it was meant for warriors, and seeing them at peace, looking at themselves in poses that they would never, and they laugh at. I mean, I have had the best time in those classes because they don't, you know, if they do it well, it's okay. Right, and if they don't, it's okay. And
well, also, I mean, in contemporary society, the image of yoga is really different, right, than like a warrior ideal.
Like
it's the most common image. Yeah. So when you have veterans coming into class, what's the attitude at first? Do they seem open in general or skittish? Or
they
what's going on?
I was a witness to three of them in particular that came in scared. They didn't know what they were up against. And they were, what are we going to do? So we don't chant per se.
Yeah.
We do om just to let the breath be, you know, unison. But it was so funny to see them just, they couldn't cross their legs. They didn't want to. This hurts. look, we have to go slow.
Yeah.
But they're all laughing at each other, and it's okay.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and pick up on this theme once again once we come back after, a short break. Yogami. Back with Yogami, continuing with our discussion of the relationship between yoga and like outreach to veterans, I would say, mm-hmm. right? That's probably a good way to phrase it. And so we were discussing with Lourdes Sanchez, our friend Lulu, really the attitude that she encounters toward the classes and toward the practice in general when she first starts working with veterans. And so you were saying?
At the beginning, they're freaked out. They don't know what you're going to do with them. They can't bend a certain way, and it's all in good fun. They make fun at each other, and it's great to see that. Because sometimes as I was going through yoga, not training, but just doing yoga, I would realize people would look at each other and compete in poses and make sure that one was doing better than the other. Here, they don't care. At all. if you're bending, hey, they'll cheer you. If you can't bend, hey, you need a little more polish in that. You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. I have enjoyed that immensely. And just, we have to use a lot of props. Because sometimes getting them into certain poses, we have used even ballet bars to have them stretch or hold themselves and stuff when they have balance issues and stuff. But they have a blast.
And I find also, because I've worked with them as well, that they're really appreciative of your time and your attention and that you're creating a space and, you know, that they feel welcome, that they feel seen, that they feel loved and taken care of in a way that they don't always experience even at home, because they come back and sometimes people don't know really even how to deal with them, right? Like, you know, what is the right thing to say? How do I act? How do I, you know, so they come in, they feel like really safe, I think, in those classes as
because
well.
They're with each other also.
They're with each other. Yeah. They're with you. You're there because you want to be.
Yes.
You know, and I find I found that they were very disciplined also about showing up. Hmm. Like, you know, regular yogis and all that, they take a hiatus.
Mm-hmm. It might be
for
raining.
Weeks or, and yeah, it's raining too much.
Mucho calor.
Yeah. Something's happening. But they're like, they're there, you know, and they show up. Like, their discipline is real.
They're there. They're punctual.
Their dedication.
They will help you bring the bolsters, bring the mats, bring this, bring that, because we bring everything for them.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman in particular brings everything in for us, as usually the assistants are girls, mm-hmm. the ladies, and but they're all right with that. They help us all bring the stuff in. They put everything away, mm-hmm. which is another thing that you've mm-hmm. seen. Mm-hmm. They're very structured.
And I would think this sense of unity and cohesion also keeps people coming back, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it grows. Because mm-hmm. they talk about it with their friends. Hey, you should see this is a cool class. This is run. It's easy. It's mm-hmm. it's okay for you to be here, and it brings them in.
Maybe we should switch to talking about some of the practical issues with organizing a class for, you know, this type of practice. And you already mentioned some differences, like you tend to shy away from balancing, or at least modify them, and you focus somewhat on balancing poses.
Yes.
And aspects like that. Can you give us a general sense of like your process? How do you sort of design a program or even a single class for this audience?
What we have seen is that we always talk. There is no time for them to be alone with their mind. That's what we focus on. Even when they are in restorative poses, we are talking to them. They are feeling their belly rise and fall. They are feeling their breath. Something. You keep talking. At the beginning, it was very strange for me mm-hmm. because I wanted to tell my teacher, hey, let them have a minute.
Yeah, lighten up.
Right. But everything is as structured as they are.
Okay.
How can I explain? It's orders. You do this, do this, do this. There's no slack.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is.
Can you mention again how that works in Shavasana? You were talking about corpse pose, and you don't
say corpse.
Yeah, right.
You say relaxation pose.
Okay. And then what happens during that period? Do you do a guided
thing? Meditation? Yes.
I see.
Yes, and we have prepared meditations for them. To feeling your fingers, feeling your toes, your legs, your mm-hmm. knees, continuously mm-hmm. speaking. And then we're coming back, turn yourself to one side.
Mm-hmm.
As it really freaked me out at the beginning as well, because in Shavasana,
right.
We are left 5 minutes in bliss.
Yeah.
And I close my eyes. I sometimes snore, but here there is no letting go.
If someone tries to guide us continually through Shavasana, they're going to get a bolster.
And then you're like, shut up. We'll throw blocks, bolsters, whatever we got.
Yeah.
But for them, the sound of your voice gives them a sense of calm.
Yeah.
That they are with someone
mm-hmm.
at all times.
Right. So they're not vulnerable.
Exactly.
Mm.
And some of them have, which is great, they can close their eyes after a while.
And talking about vulnerability, I mean, being on your back is very vulnerable.
Completely.
Can they lay like that, or do they have to lay on their side, or do you have to do Shavasana differently?
Depending on the person.
Okay.
We usually put a block. They can usually turn to one side mm-hmm. or put a bolster between the legs, like in a fetal position.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the person. Okay. Is the Shavasana. But most of the time, the particular group that I work with,
mm-hmm.
they're okay with Shavasana on their back.
Okay.
So, but no, Stonehenge Shavasana, mm-hmm. where you raise your legs or anything like that. It's a very protective okay. form of Shavasana.
And it must be really rewarding too for you as a teacher to see them kind of build that trust and be able to open up slowly to you and, you know, get to know you and, like, be able to finally close their eyes one day.
That is awesome. Yeah. That is so...
It's something that we take for granted.
That we take for granted.
And that would be... That's such a big deal.
It is. And they're eternally grateful. We went to a get-together when we closed the year last year. All the warriors and the teachers got together. And we just had some munchies and stuff. And everybody brought a potluck type of thing. And when we were together, they would just be thanking us. Because, as you were saying, that we're there because we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
We are not paid. It's a mission of love. And they appreciate every minute you give to them. And just sometimes the touch, as we learned with Judith Lasseter, that you ask permission. And and every time with warriors, you ask permission.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is very sensitive to them. But then after a while, that's another thing that you're grateful for because you can hold them, you can move them, and they're all right with it.
Okay.
Because they trust you.
Some of my favorite classes are ones where, like, you do a really intense physical practice and you feel like, not wrung out, but like opened up as a result of these poses, particularly when directed by a taskmaster. Teacher.
That we both know and love.
I'm getting the sense these classes are very different. That there's, it's not like going to be that kind of intense pose-oriented practice.
Yes, it can be.
Oh, it can be.
But we cater to the weakest of the lot.
I see.
So they know that that's what we're catering to.
Okay.
When a person comes in with some kind of disability or some kind of problem, we will cater to that person, and they know it. So they've been practicing with us enough that if there is no one, they're going to get beaten. They will be doing all kinds of active poses. So they sort of call each other to make sure that one of them with a disability goes in so they can do more restorative practice.
The system is rigged.
Oh, completely.
They're pulling people.
But that is the best because sometimes they'll say, this person, their last name, this person isn't here. Oh, man, this person isn't here. So now they'll know that they're going to do an active class.
Okay.
Because we know what they're capable of doing. And they're very good. Very, very good. So.
If we had a title for this podcast, it should be called A Mission of Love. Because you said that, and it was so beautiful. It's like, this is what this is about.
It is.
A Mission of Love.
You get such satisfaction with these, I say gentlemen, but there are lady warriors that are in our class. And so ladies and gentlemen that come to class, and they are from all Air Force, Navy, Marines, every form of the United States Armed Forces. And they are so cool and so thankful that, you know, you just enjoy every second you are with them and try to balance out their feelings so they won't be so, stressed out, if you can say that.
That's excellent. All right, we'll be back in just a few seconds after this brief break. Okay, and we're back continuing our discussion about yoga and veterans. And so Lily was just telling us about how to design a class, like a veteran-centered practice. How about in terms of outcomes? So you've been doing this for a while. In terms of the people who have been returning that you've been working with for a while, what kinds of changes do you tend to see? What kinds of, how effective are, is this practice in general?
Very, because they want to be able to move. They want to be able to have flexibility. Mm-hmm. And they've heard so much about yoga and being able to be flexible and maintain flexibility in their life.
Yeah.
And they get so much out of it. Not only movement, but just peace, you know? Mm-hmm. It's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, I'm interested in that because, of course, that's the, one of the things that yoga does most for us, right? Mm-hmm. That it's goes from outside to inside. Is that a good way to express that?
Yeah, it's like a cereal box. It was good.
Yes.
You know? Go from the outside to the inside.
Yeah, it's like a Hallmark card.
But it's an interesting. We have like three warriors, you know, in our yoga practice.
We do.
So. Yeah, there's warrior one, two, and three.
Oh, I mean, warrior, I thought you meant like, specific individuals.
No, but I mean, that's sorry, I framed that incorrectly. But yeah, but it is that same, and
yes,
it's that same kind of discipline that we look for even in those poses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look at the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Right, the longest epic poem. It's all about war and Arjuna, which is the greatest warrior. Mm-hmm. On earth fighting these other great warriors and, you know, and the courage it takes to show up for yourself, the courage it takes for these vets to show up for themselves too,
mm-hmm.
and for their families, because I'm sure that they want to find a way to soften and reintegrate into, you know, in a relationship with their loved ones, with their kids, mm-hmm. with their friends even that have not been to war, and how to do that. So, you know, it's courage on that warrior level that we have to come to the practice with as
right.
well. And we can learn a lot also from these warriors that have actually been on the battle, on actual battlegrounds,
yes.
you know, and how they've been able to kind of strip away their sense of fear. I mean, that's one mm-hmm. of the things that we have to face. That's one of our kleshas, right? The fear of death.
Yes.
Abhinivesha. And here these warriors have come back having faced that many times over. Stripped away their ego too, and what that means to be an individual. I mean, the kleshas mm-hmm. are perfect for this. It's like,
yeah.
you know, my ego is stripped away, my sense of separation is stripped away, and you know that they can work on the field and in a classroom, you know, in the same way.
And the teaching of ahimsa for them mm-hmm. is in their bodies. Sometimes they don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So to teach that. It's, you have to go very slow with that because you don't want them to hurt themselves. And as she was speaking of the kleshas, and I was thinking right now, in warrior, in other balancing poses that we use, and some poses that are, you know, Surya Namaskar A, that we go through the entire thing
mm-hmm.
when we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, please. Slow down. Don't go too fast. Concentrate on your breath.
Mm-hmm.
But they're always, you know, visualizing. And that's important.
But what a beautiful space to give them that they can be gentle with themselves.
Yes.
Because they've had
right.
to learn to be so tough and like to, you know, to literally take bullets or bombs or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So to have a place where they can be soft, that they've never been trained to do.
No.
Or given permission to do it.
Right.
So, you know, you as the director or you as the, I don't know the major or the general or whatever it
right.
is. Like, you know, your job right now is to be gentle.
Yeah.
You know, is to practice ahimsa. That's.
But you have to repeat it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And that's something that even in the practices that we do, sometimes in restorative or not, hey, if you're twisting and it hurts, let it go or go slow. Just make sure it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You have to care for you, but you have to tell them mm-hmm. over and over.
So. Do you encounter a lot of, I was going to say impediments, but what's working most against you?
their mind.
Okay.
Their mind. Sometimes, if we do something that might, you don't understand, you don't know exactly what might trigger something of a traumatic experience.
A word or phrase.
A word, like a phrase, a pose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
Anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there when something like that happened, and the person just, it was an anger, and she left.
Mm.
And she didn't come back for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And thank heaven that we were able to get in touch with her, because there have been people that leave mm-hmm. and you can never get in touch with them again.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to get her more or less back into the class, and now she continues to come to the class.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you don't know what might cause a trigger. So it's something that we have to be very mindful of, because
I imagine something even as like a block falling or something.
Yes.
Right. Could jar somebody.
Particularly in those hypersensitive environments that you build in a class where, you know, every sound.
We usually practice facing the door. So that at all times they see the door.
Wow.
We practice with lights on.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure that they feel safe. It's nothing. If you go to a warrior class, you won't see anything different. It's just the practice. Of course, you'll notice that the lights don't get turned off, and we're always talking. That's something that you can see. But other than that, we do all the poses that we can do, and we sequence the class the same.
Mm-hmm.
And just being mindful of the limitations and making sure that we don't use certain words that don't trigger any effects on them.
That's a nice way to kind of wrap up that portion of our discussion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a yoga class.
It's a yoga class.
So if you wanted to sort of paint us a closing sketch of your experiences and so forth, what would you like to leave the audience with in terms of working with veterans?
I am very thankful for that. They are very protective individuals that have made it their lives to protect us. And the least we can do is help them come back to a normal,
mm-hmm.
if we can call it that,
life,
you know, with families and friends and taking them out of that heightened stress level, even for a little while.
Sounds like an integration experience.
It is.
Going back to the core of yoga, really,
right.
In that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yoking themselves back to
back.
So if people wanted to find out more about, you know, maybe getting in touch with this kind of practice or getting access to resources, is there some place you would point them to or some organization?
Connected Warriors. Connected Warriors. And if they'd like to participate in a warrior yoga class, there is one in Shake a Leg, which is in Coconut Grove. There's a warrior class that takes place on Wednesdays, I believe. And every Wednesday in Hollywood at the community center on Hollywood Beach, we have Lori Nadel and I have a warrior class as well. All of them are free. All the warrior classes are free.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. That was so enlightening and inspiring.
Yeah.
It was my pleasure. Complete. Thank you for having me.
Lulu Sanchez.
Thank you again, Lulu.
You're welcome.
And we will be back as Yogami in, we tend to be back somewhere between 1.5 and 1 month.
Soon. Okay.
Yeah, I love it. It's always soon.
Okay.